Today's reading is 2 Samuel chapter 9, verses 1 through 13. David asked, "Is there anyone still left of the house of Saul to whom I may show kindness for Jonathan's sake?" Now there was a servant of the house of Saul whose name was Ziba, and he was summoned to David. The king said to him, "Are you Ziba?" And he said, "At your service." The king said, "Is there anyone remaining of the house of Saul to whom I may show the kindness of God?" Ziba said to the king, "There remains a son of Jonathan. He is crippled in his feet." The king said to him, "Where is he?" Ziba said to the king, "He is in the house of Machir, son of Amiel, at Lodabar." Then King David sent and brought him from the house of Machir, son of Amiel, at Lodabar. Mephibosheth, son of Jonathan, son of Saul, came to David and fell on his face and did obeisance. David said, "Mephibosheth." He answered, "I am your servant." David said to him, "Do not be afraid, for I will show you kindness for the sake of your father Jonathan. I will restore to you all the land of your grandfather Saul, and you yourself shall eat at my table always." He did obeisance and said, "What is your servant that you should look upon a dead dog such as I?" Then the king summoned Saul's servant Ziba and said to him, "All that belonged to Saul and all his house I have given to your master's grandson. You and your sons and your servants shall till the land for him and shall bring in the produce so that your master's grandson may have food to eat. But your master's grandson, Mephibosheth, shall always eat at my table." Now Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. Then Ziba said to the king, "According to all that my lord the king commands his servant, so your servant will do." Mephibosheth ate at David's table like one of the king's sons. Mephibosheth had a young son whose name was Micah, and all who lived in Ziba's house became Mephibosheth's servants. Mephibosheth lived in Jerusalem, for he always ate at the king's table. Now he was lame in both feet.
The line inside the movie theater was long. It was longer than the opening day of a new ride at an amusement park. My friends and I had waited all afternoon. We had been waiting for 6 months to see this movie. Finally, a middle-aged woman comes out the theater doors with her faithful crew behind her with large trash bags and brooms and dustpans, and she nodded to the teenager at the ticket counter that we could come in. And so we found our seats, and I juggled in my hands a large butter popcorn, Milk Duds, and a Sprite. And finally, that opening scene scrolled before us. Beautiful, amazing trumpets and drums. And everyone in the theater literally stood up and clapped and cheered. And it was only the beginning. And I spilt my popcorn on the person in front of me, and they didn't even mind. And it was as if this careful orchestration told us that this movie, that this next hour and a half was going to be a great adventure. That something extraordinary was going to happen as we sat on the edge of our seats. Do you remember George Lucas's Star Wars? It's summer and we have to have a little fun in here. So Star Wars is the journey of a hero. It's the story of the rise and the fall and the redemption of Anakin Skywalker. And so in this incredible movie, in case for the last 35 years you've missed it, Darth Vader, Anakin Skywalker, is Luke's father. You got it. Good. So as this story unfolds, we get to episode 6, The Return of the Jedi. In this last 10 minutes of the movie, Luke Skywalker's heart speaks to him. And it says, "There is good in your..." your father, Darth Vader. And everyone else told him, even Obi-Wan Kenobi says, no, your father is more of a machine than a man. So Luke Skywalker gets on the Death Star, and in this incredible encounter right at the end, he's hiding at this moment from Darth Vader, and Darth Vader senses his presence, and there's this telepathy thing going back and forth, this Jedi mind games and things I don't understand. And at this moment, Darth Vader, he has an opposite plan. He thinks, I will turn my son to the dark side. The tension in this scene, you can just feel it. And so if Chewbacca was watching on this scene, he would do this, of course, which sounds a little like this, which could be interpreted, this Wookiee smells trouble. How's Luke going to get out of this one? And so all of a sudden, Luke, out of his mind, shares his fears for his sister, Princess Leia. Darth Vader hears this and says, you have a sister. I'll turn her to the dark side. Luke breaks out the lifesaver and is just furious with passion and fervor. He's back and forth. He's got Darth Vader on his heels, and Darth Vader falls down, and he slices off his robotic arm. And at this point, you're all six episodes, you follow the narrative, you're like, yes! And he brings up the lifesaver, one more blow, and the force of good wins, and evil is conquered. The Republic thrives. But Luke cannot kill his father. He puts the lifesaver back. His heart speaks. There's good in him. And so the emperor comes down, the evil emperor, and says, Luke, this is your last chance. You're either going to the dark side or you are going to die. And Luke says, I will never go to the dark side, at which the emperor surges outside of his hands, force lightning. And so Luke is literally on the ground, these electromagnets buzzing through his body, killing him. He's screaming in pain. And then the scene slows down. And it's this long, awkward pause because we know that Darth Vader is going to get up. He's got to. So as he slowly gets up, and this scene just makes us pause, and we're on the edge of our seat thinking, what's going to happen? So we pause and we ask a very serious question this morning. So we all know that lightsabers are very important. Everyone likes them. You could actually buy them. But I want to make a case for force lightning here. I mean, it comes out of your hand. There's no sense of saber training, just straight force lightning. Right, so my vote, when you talk about lightsabers or force lightning, it's much easier. Go with force lightning. Okay, back to the action. Luke is on the ground, just screaming for pain. And Darth Vader is watching all this happen. And you can't see his facial expressions because, of course, he's got the Darth Vader mask on. And he's standing next to the Emperor now, fully up. And you're like, what's going to happen? How's this supposed to end? Because Luke had his chance. All he had to do was take that saber through Darth Vader, and this whole thing would have been over. But now the movie's only got like 5 minutes. All my popcorn's gone, and I want to know how this ends, right? And so then, in the last possible second, Darth Vader picks up the Emperor, and the electric shock comes and is absorbed all on Darth Vader, and he throws him into the reactor core of the Death Star. And it's this incredible moment. But because of all that electromagnet, it has short-circuited Darth Vader's. So Darth Vader is now going to die. And so Luke is carrying him. And Luke carries him and sets him down. And something happened that moment where Luke decided not to slash him with his saber. It's as if Darth Vader, finally the chains that had been binding him to the dark force were broken up. Love, the love of a son, broke the chains that were binding Darth Vader. And so then Luke is sitting with him, and Darth Vader asks him to take off his helmet, and Darth Vader, of course, they look into each other's eyes. Anakin Skywalker, his father, is back, and all his father can say is, you were right. You were right. Luke's heart spoke, and it was right. And then, of course, all the forces of good start to win at that moment in the movie. And the Republic is restored. The Death Star crumbles. And you're pumping your fists in your seat because it came to this glorious ending. And at the very end of the movie, in sort of this eternal heaven, you see Anakin Skywalker with Obi-Wan Kenobi. The movie has reached its fulfillment in the redemption of Anakin Skywalker. But when you're in that moment, it's very interesting because the storyline surprises us. And this is why it's a great movie. Luke was supposed to take that saber through Darth Vader. It would have ended it. It would have been done. It would have been pretty good, kind of like Rambo, but not that good. And so by putting down the lifesaver, he chooses an act of peace, an act of peace between him and his father, an act of peace in the galactic universe that changes things. And so the scripture that was read today was from 1 and 2 Samuel. And in this scripture, this story of 1 and 2 Samuel is just like Star Wars. It's the story of the rise and the fall and the redemption of King David. It's a moving story in the Bible. We learn of David, all of a sudden he's a shepherd boy in Israel to becoming a king. And in 2 Samuel 9, he's about a middle career professional. The kingdom is secured. Everything is good. He's on the throne in Jerusalem. But there's something not quite right. And in terms of success as a king, he has united the northern and the southern empires in Israel. He's brought the Ark of the Covenant to Jerusalem. He has fought off all the enemies in Israel. He's a good king. He's the type of king they were expecting all this time. Finally, Israel is a nation that it's supposed to be. But remember, Israel is supposed to be God's nation. They are sort of beat to a different drummer. There's a different ethos and mission and vision running through the nation. And David, looking back on his long military career and his success, he thinks, who is there left of the house of Saul that I can show kindness for Jonathan's sake? Now this is like his heart is open. His heart is speaking to him. Something is going on here. And if you remember, there was a great civil war just 10 years ago between Saul's family and David's family. And this is how it goes in ancient warfare. When one king is coming in, the other king is going out. So this huge civil war happens, and David's mighty men did what mighty men do in ancient warfare, annihilated all of Saul's family. Because in ancient warfare, you can't have someone that's going to take over the throne. There can't be any political threats left. But David, middle of his life, kingdom is secured. Is there anybody left? And the honest answer is probably not. David probably knew that his mighty men had taken care of everything. But they send for a man named Ziba. And so Ziba comes to the castle. And Ziba was a longtime servant of Saul's household. And David asks him the question, is there anyone left of the house of Saul that I can show the kindness of God? And so Ziba says, yes. Ziba brings this good news. Says, yes, there's a son. Oh, his name's Mephibosheth, but remember, he's crippled in both of his legs. So there's this sense of deep breath in the story. Probably during the Civil War, this baby Mephibosheth was dropped and his legs were crippled. And that probably explains why he's still alive. He wasn't a political threat in the ancient world. His name, Mephibosheth, means the shameful one. And so he lives in Lodebar, about 40 miles northeast of Jerusalem, with Ziba's family. He has no family left. His grandfather and his father were killed, and his mother's mother, all of them of the house of Saul, killed. He's a young man now. And so King David learns of this and says, we'll send for him immediately. So David's mighty men, they mount up their horses and their chariots, and they go up north to Lodebar. Now imagine, from Mephibosheth's perspective, right? These mighty warriors are knocking on the door, and it's like, yeah, I know what happened to my dad. I know what happened to my granddad. I know what happened to my mom. And now they've come for me. This is it. This is the end. So Mephibosheth mounts that horse and makes that trek to Jerusalem and sprawls himself in front of King David and says, here I am, your servant. a very smart move in front of an ancient king, right? And the only option you have, right? And then something happens, a surprise in this story. David looks down at Mephibosheth. Remember, he's the son of his best friend, Jonathan, who had been killed in the civil war. And he says, "Do not fear. I will show you kindness." Now, you need to know that ancient kings don't act this way. This is not what he's supposed to do. An ancient king would have killed off Mephibosheth, so there was no threat. But King David's heart is speaking to him. The word for kindness in Hebrew is hased. It's a word that runs throughout the whole biblical story. And it means more than just one word, kindness. It means God's steadfast love, faithfulness, committed loyalty, dynamic love, covenant fidelity, or a gift on top of a gift. So David was seeking someone that he could show the hased of God, someone that he could just pile on love. He had remembered his heart, this ancient dream, this ancient story that the God of Israel, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, was a God of hased, a God of love. So David, Mephibosheth, throws himself before David. David says, "Do not fear. I'm going to show you the hased. And here's how I'm going to do it. All of your grandfather's land, it's yours. And on top of that, you are never going to eat at another table beside mine for the rest of your life. You're going to be at the king's table." So David's enemy is now going to sit at the king's table. David's enemy, this boy Mephibosheth, is now going to be like a son. He's going to eat with the sons and the daughters of David, with the mighty men, all at the round table. The shameful one has become the honored one. Everything has been turned upside down. Instead of a sword, there's an act of love, an act of peace. So David then says once again to Ziba, "Go, tend the fields. Mephibosheth will never eat at any other table but mine for the rest of his life." And then the passage tells us that Mephibosheth finds a wife. Mephibosheth has kids of his own. David has shown Mephibosheth the hased, and this storyline surprises us. It's not what an ancient king should do. That's why it's such a great story. And it hums in our hearts from 2,000 years ago. Another king comes to Israel, and they had great expectations for this new king. They had hoped that just like David, he would take care of the Roman forces, the Roman army, the high Roman taxation. They thought he would be a warrior king. But this rabbi named Jesus, the crowds were all around him. And then his story is the story of his life, his death, and his resurrection. He goes up to a mountaintop and he says, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called the children of God." So in this incredible story, this would-be king, he goes to a mountain, which is very king-like, but then he says, it's about peace. Unlikely heroes, or heroes who do unlikely things, make peace. They do actions of peace for one another. And so, we ask the question of ourselves today, how do we become peacemakers in our day-to-day lives? And maybe we ask a deeper question inside of all of us. Can I really be a hero? I mean, you talked about Luke Skywalker and King David and Jesus. What could I really do? And what's fascinating about all three stories is these hero-like moments don't happen on a great and mighty battlefield. In fact, they happen away from everyone. Heroes are made in the small, teeny moments of life. In caring for your daughter as she cries at night. In tying your son's shoelace. In listening to the friend who's just going through it right now. Heroes are in the small moments in our life. The hased can be a reality to every one of us. Aristotle, an ancient philosopher, said that habits make a hero. He said, by doing the acts that we do in our transactions with other people, we become just or unjust. And by doing the acts that we do in the presence of danger and being habituated to feel fear or confidence, we become brave or cowardly. It makes no small difference then whether we form habits of one kind or another from our very youth. It makes a very great difference, or rather, all the difference. Becoming a hero is simple habits, day after day. And so, becoming a hero is pine cones, seashells, wildflower seeds, Martin Luther King Jr.'s dream, rubber bouncy balls, and everlasting gobstoppers. Are you with me? Yeah. These simple images that are everywhere in our world help us to remember and to practice the habits of becoming a person of peace. A pine cone, we are fed. We remember that that pine cone is connected to a tree, and that tree is connected underneath it all to a source of sustaining water, just like our life. We are connected to the creator of the universe. God, who is the good parent, God, who is the Son, and God, who is the Spirit, surges through your very being. And seashells, we remember. We remember at the beach, the sand beneath our toes, and we remember the waves, and we remember the fresh breezes. We remember that all of life is a gift. Every single moment is a chance to share your life, to be a hero. Wildflower seeds. One of the things that paralyzes us from being a wildflower is all those hard feelings, all those broken and bitter places, all those people who have done hurt to us. The image of a wildflower seed reminds us that as we sow a seed, we let go. We don't ever forget, and we're not always perfect, but we let go of the pain that others have caused us. The dream speech. I love that last section of Martin Luther King Jr.'s dream because he starts imagining what a new world could look like. And that's the heart of what it means to be Christian, to imagine what a world of all filled with hased can look like. And we need the poets in our world to point us to a better future, a bigger world, more love for our kids and grandkids. Rubber bouncy balls. I love playing a rubber bouncy ball with my son. And in this simple exchange of throwing that ball back and forth, I learn the most amazing things about life. I learn what he thinks about the world and how he's doing. And of course, I learn how far that high that ball can bounce. And of course, it goes everywhere. But rubber bouncy balls and the simple encounter between another human being remind us to listen. To listen to the pains and the fears and the heartaches. And then everlasting gobstoppers. These are just delicious. There's no other reason. No, there's another reason. Gobstoppers. We share a gift. We share of ourselves. We serve. We move beyond just experiencing the chesed ourselves to giving chesed to another human being. Not very long ago, my heart started speaking. It wasn't like the announcements in elementary school that crackled into my classroom, muffled and ignored. My heart speaks like the opening scene in Star Wars. The movie title and storyline crawls up the screen to blaring trumpets and swelling drums. They promise the opening of a new world with never imagined possibilities. I am on the edge of my seat, listening to this moving magical cadence, compelling me to keep turning the page, to stand up to this soaring adventure called life. My heart speaks bigger than any movie and better than any book. My heart is a microphone. My blood carries the message to bones, muscles, organs, reaching every capillary. My body is a PA system. And your heart is a microphone. Your body is a PA system. Do you hear the trumpets and drums? This is your story, your adventure. You can't miss this one. The eternal echoes in your heart. Tears and scars and anxious hearts. Hunger and pain and dying dreams. Peace is far away, it seems. The world's heart. booming like a distant drum, does not keep silent. Peace, 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 peace. Peace can be as clear and simple as a mason jar packed with pine cones and seashells and wildflower seeds, words from Martin Luther King's dream, rubber bouncy balls and everlasting gobstoppers. I packed these mason jars and I pulled them in my red radio flyer wagon and I passed them door to door. I rang your doorbell, handed you a jar. No more tears and scars and anxious hearts. No more hunger and pain and dying dreams. Will you take this jar? Will you pick up this pine cone and hold it to your nose? Let the earthy aroma remind you that it once was connected to a branch, and that branch was connected to a great tree, and that tree's roots dug deep into the mountains where it was nourished. With every breath, let this pine cone remind you that you are connected beyond the surface of things, that deep waters sustain you. And will you rub your fingers over this seashell and remember the ocean breeze, the rhythm of waves, the creatures living in the sea, the sand between your toes? All things come and go, but change is possible, you know. Will you open this small packet of wildflower seeds and spread them everywhere? Transform the landscape of your life. As you sow these seeds, let go of everyone and everything that has ever hurt you and watch your life begin to bloom. Will you unroll this scroll and place this speech on a mirror? Let its words remind you that peace must move beyond good intentions and be written into the structures of society. Let its words remind you of how far we've come and how far we have yet to go. And let its words remind you of the power of human hearts humming as one. Will you grab this rubber bouncy ball and share it with someone whose smile has been stepped upon? Spend time throwing that ball back and forth. Let that ball bounce wherever it wants. These are the ones we need to hear the most. Will you share this everlasting gobstopper? Will you open up and give your life away? Your words and actions ringing loud and clear. I love you. I believe in you. You are going to make it through. Hear the music soar. Listen, listen closely. Your heart is a microphone. A long time ago, in a galaxy not so far away, peace. Peace can come every day. Peace is closer than it seems. Peace in every step and peace in every breath, and peace stronger than war. Eternal sound waves are surging through you. Will you take this jar? Will you share it door to door?